You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect. Let's define some terms, because I know none of you are as awesomely medically inclined as I am, because I know everything there is to know about medicine. So I thought I'd share a few with you, and sorry I sound like Darth Vader, but it's the price you have to pay for the sake of, you know, keeping my germs from spreading onto my patients. So some words that we've got here. The first one I want to tell you about is the word artery. Artery, in case you're not aware of it, artery is the study of paintings. There you go. Barium. Barium. It's what doctors do when patients die. Caesarean section. That is a neighborhood in Rome. Get them. Cauterized. That means you made eye contact with her. You cauterized. Dilate, which of course means to live long. An enema is not your friend on so many levels. A fibula. A fibula, of course, is a small lie. Not a big lie, just a little fibula. Impotent is someone who is distinguished and well-known. Labor pain. That, of course, means that you got hurt at work. Morbid. That is a higher offer. Nitrates. They are cheaper than day rates. Node. This one applied to my son. Node. That means you are aware of. Some more terms here, because obviously you don't know because you're laughing and thinking that I'm joking. Outpatient. That is a person who has fainted. Post-operative, that's a letter carrier. The recovery room, everybody knows this, the recovery room is the place where you do upholstery. Some of these are going to be driving home and be like, oh, I get that, all right. Caesar. Caesar is the Roman emperor. Terminal illness. This is the unfortunate case when you get sick at the airport. And urine. That's what umpires would say. It's the opposite of you're out. So, medical terms that you need to know, and now you know them. And why am I wearing this outfit and why am I sharing this? Well, I will get to that in a little bit. And to get rid of the Darth Vader sound, I'm going to take my mask down here for a second. But this series we've been going through, this is the last week. And we're wrapping it up today, and we've talked about some different things over the last few weeks. The first week we talked about sex. Actually, the whole series is about sex. But the first week we said how God created sex, God made sex on purpose for a purpose, and that sex was designed for within a marriage relationship. And outside of that, it's wrong. With inside of that, it's amazing. And it was designed to be this wonderful, wonderful thing, and it's a good thing. And God made it that way. And we're okay with that. Then the second week, we talked about this idea of lust. And if you remember, I was in a cage and talked about how we have taken this thing that God created as sex, and we've caged it up and said we want to make it look like this. And we call it pornography, or we call it romance or whatever. And we caged this beautiful thing that God made, and we've turned it into some sort of an exhibit at the zoo. And we talked about that week how lust promises what it can't deliver. That no matter how we feel, we think this is going to work this time, and the answer really is, ultimately it comes down to, it's not going to come through. Then last week we talked about the issue of homosexuality And we had Wilson here sharing Wilson's wisdom about Pyrrhus of Epirus and how he won this great victory over the Romans. But in the process of that victory, he lost most of his troops so that he ended up losing the entire war because he couldn't continue to fight. And so we talked about how the church views homosexuality, how we treat this issue. And we said that how sometimes winning the battle is not worth losing the war. And talking about how homosexuality is wrong, but the way we approach homosexuals really needs to change. And we need to do it in a loving, Christ-like way. And so this week I want to wrap everything up talking about this one concept. And this is what I want you to walk away with today. And that is that sex should be treasured, not just tolerated. Sex should be treasured, not just tolerated. And what I'm talking about here is that we have taken, and I would say, obviously, you know, from the response generated just from this month and this series, you know, in culture, we have taken sex and it's kind of taken away this beautiful, amazing thing that God designed, and we've turned it into this kind of like, yeah, okay. You know, it's become a joke on a sitcom. It's become, you know, high-selling internet porn. It's become, I mean, all sorts of things. But it's not the thing that God designed, this treasure, this beautiful thing. And we have come along and just kind of tolerated it. Oh, okay, whatever. Yeah, that's sex. Oh, that was funny. That was probably inappropriate. But I laughed. You know, or, well, this isn't really that bad. Or it's not that much of a bad scene, or whatever. And we kind of have taken this treasured thing and tolerated it. And I would say this happens inside the church, too. Like I was saying, that this series has generated a lot of buzz because churches don't talk about this. We don't want to talk about it. And I just want to kind of reiterate where we've been going this whole month, looking at this is something that is amazing, that should be treasured. And something you treasure. I heard a great sermon recently about a treasure buried in a field. And something that is treasured is something you care about, that you take care of, you desire, you protect, you it's a big thing. And we've taken this thing that God designed and we've allowed culture to hijack it and kind of turn it in a completely different direction. And as the church, as Christ followers, we've just kind of put up with it. We've just tolerated it. We've just not necessarily that we turn a blind eye, but we actually encourage some of the stuff that really is not treasuring what God designed. So if you have your Bibles or the YouVersion app, and I know I put it on the screen, but if you have one, go ahead and turn to Ephesians chapter 5, because I'm going to be bouncing back and forth in this chapter, and the screen is not going to be able to keep up. So if you have a copy, the lights are going to come on, and you can look at your paper copy, or you can use your smartphone or tablet or whatever to find Ephesians chapter 5. We're looking at verses 3 and following. But like I said, I'm going to be bouncing back and forth to this a lot. So if you have your own copy to look at, you can see that what I'm talking about is not just my words, but hopefully the words of God. So in Ephesians chapter 5, beginning at verse 3, this is Paul. He's writing to a church in a place called Ephesus. And it's a real church. It was at the time, at least. And this is a letter that he sent to them and said, here's some things we need to deal with. And so this is what he says beginning in verse 3. He says, among you, there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality or of any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Nor should there be obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. He goes on and says, for of this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a person is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of such things, God's wrath comes on those who are disobedient. Therefore, do not be partners with them. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light. For the fruit of light consists in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. And find out what pleases the Lord. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. And so I think Paul is talking, this whole passage kind of ties in this idea of sex and sexual immorality, and we'll look at some of these things. But he says this key phrase, he says, look, you were once darkness. You were once stuck in your sin. You were once stuck in all of these things that he shares here. He says, but now you have been rescued. You have been brought into the light of Jesus. His death on the cross has forgiven your sin, has removed it. If you're a Christ follower, he says, stop living like you're still in the dark. Live as children of the light. And so this isn't a passage written to the people out there. This is written to us. That as Christ followers, he's saying, look, you've been set free. We talked about this last week. That was what some of you were, but you've been washed. You've been sanctified. You've been justified. And so he's saying, look, you are different. So stop living your old way. Stop living in darkness. Sex was this amazing thing that God created. And we're just tolerating it. We're just kind of joking about it. We're shacking up, hooking up, whatever. And kind of taking this thing that should be treasured, and we're just like, eh, whatever. It's not a big deal. And Paul says, live as children of light. There's no reason to be in the dark anymore. So, I want to look at these two aspects. First of all, I want to talk about tolerating sex. And I hope you understand what I mean by this. This is not that we need to be intolerant in the way that word is used so often today. But just, we put up with a lot of stuff that we shouldn't. We spend a lot of time in darkness when it comes to sex, when really we should be living as children of light. And kind of in a contradictory term, I guess you say, not contradiction, but at the same time, we should be talking about sex and how God designed it and celebrating that. And that's okay. But there's a lot of the things that are not okay that we're like, okay, that's not a big deal. We'll put up with that. That's all right. We don't care. So I want to look at kind of comparing these two phrases, tolerating and treasuring sex. So the first thing is with tolerating sex is that, you know, looking at the problems that we have, he says you were once in darkness. And so all these things, Paul is equating to this idea of being in the dark. And he says you're not in the dark anymore, but you used to be. And these are some of the things that you did when you were in darkness. And I kind of categorize this because there's a list of like, I don't know, I think I came up with 15 things in this passage that Paul picks on, but I've kind of categorized them into three main categories. The first thing is what I'm categorizing as sexual innuendo. And all of these things, by the way, are outside of God's design. Sexual innuendo, and we'll see what that means in a second, but I guess what I'm saying is don't miss that this is what you're talking about when it's not with your spouse. With your spouse, talk about it, hint about it, joke about it. It's awesome. My mother-in-law and father-in-law are right over there. And but yeah, I mean, inside of marriage, it's okay to drop hints. It's okay to make obvious references. It's okay. That's the way God designed it. It should be something we enjoy, something we treasure, something that is amazing and fun and great. But outside of this context, I think is the area where we start tolerating stuff that we shouldn't. And this is the idea of sexual innuendo. The first thing he talks about there in verse 3 is about sexual immorality. He says, among you, and listen to this word, there should not be a hint of sexual immorality. Not a hint. That word means it should be so much off of your radar that you're not even, the name doesn't even come up. And he doesn't mean you're covering it up or hiding. But he said that when it comes to sexual innuendo, when it comes to these things that we shouldn't be talking about, he says not even a hint, not just a little bit, because we're often, and I mean, I was just talking to someone yesterday. I'm like, well, this movie that I was watching, it was kind of bad because it had this one thing in it. Paul says one thing is too much, not a hint, not a hint. And he says of sexual immorality. And that word is a favorite word we've been looking at over the last 4 weeks. It keeps popping up over and over and over, and it's the word porneia. That's as one author describes it, as the junk drawer that the authors use to kind of throw in everything that is inappropriate sexually, whether that's adultery, prostitution, fornication, sex outside of marriage, sex with whatever. I mean, it's that whole category. And he says, among you, there shouldn't even be a hint of sexual immorality. And he goes on and says, or of any kind of impurity. And this word impurity means this idea of that which is without cleansing. That's what, which is dirt. There shouldn't be any kind of dirt when it comes to how we talk about sex among you. There shouldn't be anything that way. And of course, we talked about that last week, about the idea of being cleansed and washed and how, you know, and our kids. I mean, I don't understand how, like, my boy can just walk through the house, come from upstairs to downstairs, and have brown everywhere on his face. I don't understand that. Like, it's okay if we're out, like, digging in the dirt with our teeth. But he wasn't doing that. He was just walking through the house and somehow comes up covered in filth. And that's this word. He says, you know, that there shouldn't be any kind of impurity, any kind of filth, any kind in our lives. And so this idea of sexual innuendo, and we know what those things are. We talk about them, we joke about them, we see them on TV and books or whatever. And he says, among you, there shouldn't be this hint. There shouldn't be a hint of this stuff. Again, within your marriage, go for it. Have at it. Joke about it. Watch who's listening. Sometimes people pick up stuff. But outside of that, he says, not even a hint of sexual innuendo or do you know what I mean by innuendo? Just kind of the comments that are made on the side, the things that we joke and laugh about. And he says, not a hint of that. The second thing he goes on and says, you were once in darkness. The second thing is sexual desire. And it's really interesting to me that last week we looked at this passage when it comes to sexual immorality and this list of sins. And in the midst of all the sexual sins that we looked at last week and here, Paul includes the word greed. And the thing about greed is that there is something about an attitude that says, I want more. That you know, obviously we think about greed means I want more money. And it does mean that. But this word means so much more when we talk about I want more. And we're somehow not satisfied with what we've got. And so we have this desire for more. And whether that's, you know, well, obviously this is, we're talking about outside of marriage. Well, my spouse isn't enough, so I'm going to read these novels to kind of complete what I need. Or, you know, my spouse isn't good enough, so I'm going to check out porn on the internet. It's okay. It's not that big of a deal. It's just fulfilling my desire. And he says that there shouldn't be this idea of greed, not a hint of this sexual desire, of this greed, of this wanting to have more. And we'll see in just a minute that he says, don't just want more. Thank God for what you've got. Thank him for the way he designed it. But I'm going ahead of myself. So he says, not a hint of sexual innuendo, not a hint of sexual desire, because these are things about darkness. The third thing he says is sexual words. Our speech. Are we talking about things inappropriately? Again, if you haven't gotten this inside marriage, fine. But outside of that, are we sparking thoughts and ideas that we shouldn't because we're using our words inappropriately? And the idea, he says, you know, there shouldn't be any obscenity. And we know what obscenity means, those things that are obscene. I guess we know what that is. Then he says, or foolish talk. And this word here means, it's basically things that you say that have an immoral connotation. It's a very churchy kind of phrase. But he's like, you know, are you saying things that stir up thoughts in people that you shouldn't be? Are they risque? Are you talking, joking with friends, with other people, with coworkers about things that would be considered obscene? Would you talk about that in front of your mother-in-law or father-in-law? You know, are those things that you wouldn't say, wouldn't do? I mean, I've shared with you before about how all of a sudden, and maybe you had this you know, either with your kids or perhaps when you were dating or something, your spouse, and you know, you go get together with the family and you're watching a movie and all of a sudden things that otherwise didn't bother you, you're like, oh, I hope they didn't hear that. Oh, I hope that didn't happen. And that's the thing. Like, if we're talking about stuff that we shouldn't be talking about in any other context except within marriage, then we should stop talking about it. And this so foolish talk, it's again, it's risque, it's suggestive talk. Coarse joking is the next thing he says, and that's the idea of using, and the word means to manipulate. And I think it's really interesting. The word means to basically use laughter to manipulate people to think about things that are inappropriate. And we don't think we're manipulating people, but we take something that is fun, that is great, that is, I mean, laughter. We love laughing. It's a good thing. There's lots of ways we can laugh. But what Paul is talking about here is using joking in a way to cause people kind of, when we laugh, we drop our guard. You know, our guard falls down. Is that what happens? And he's saying taking something like laughter and manipulating it and using it to get, when people's guards are down, using that as an opportunity to start talking about inappropriate things, sexual innuendo, sexual desire. So he says, you know, we tolerate this stuff. We put up with it. And I'm not saying that I don't and I am perfectly holy and none of you are. But Paul says we shouldn't. Paul says not a hint. Paul says not any kind of impurity, foolish talk, coarse joking. And he goes on and says that these things result in God's wrath. That when we were in darkness, it's because of our coarse joking, because of our sexual words, our sexual desire, our inappropriate sexual desire, because of the sexual innuendo. He says all of these things, they categorize you in this group of sinners. And these sinners receive God's wrath. We were deserving of God's wrath, of God's anger. And he says that a person that does these things is considered an idolater. And idolatry is something, you know, we don't think about it today because we're not worshiping big carvings of things. And we'll get to that in a couple months when we go through Daniel during our Strong series. But this idea of adultery is basically putting anything in place of God, where God should be, we put that there. And Paul is saying that sometimes we've turned sex into an idol. We've made it into this thing that God designed, God made as a treasure, as a wonderful thing, and we put it in God, in place of God. We're not happy. It's not enough. We want more. And so we become idols, idol worshipers because of it. And in verse 6, Paul says, look, don't let anyone deceive you with empty talk, with empty words. And what he's saying is, don't miss this. Because here's what's going to happen, okay? You leave here this morning and you say, you know what? This is something I really need to change. This is something that I need to make a difference in my life. And you will go home, or you will go to work, or you will go somewhere and around the water cooler, in the break room, people will start joking about stuff. And if you say, this is something I want to do, you'll take a stand and say, you know what? Excuse me, I'm going to go back to my desk, register, cubicle, pick your term, car, factory spot. And people will then probably say, what? It's not that big of a deal. This doesn't matter that much. I mean, we're just joking. That's what Paul is saying. Don't let anyone deceive you with empty words. Don't let anybody make you think that, oh, it's not that big of a deal, because sin is a big deal to God. Sin is an issue for God. And so we've got this idea where we tolerated sex and said we were in darkness. These were things, this is the way we used to live. Used to live. But he says, you're now children of light. Don't live this way anymore. You can breathe the fresh air. You can walk on the bank. Stop swimming in the sewage. Another great sermon I heard recently. Do you get it? He's saying, we're not stuck in darkness anymore. I mean, think about it. Imagine walking through life in darkness. Imagine, you know, I don't know. I went caving once, spelunking, and we were in a spot where you turn off your flashlight. You couldn't see anything. Like this, you couldn't see. And if I walked around like that, I would probably get hurt. And it's sort of like us going through life saying, okay, I know I've got a flashlight, but I'm not going to use it. I'm just going to kind of keep going this way. And we get banged up and bruised and hurt and are bleeding and are messed up, knock ourselves out, wake back up. Oh, we're in terrible pain. We break bones. And then we're like, well, why is this happening? And Paul's saying, turn on your light. You don't have to live in darkness anymore. You have been given the light from God. Stop tolerating sex and start treasuring it. And that's the next thing he says. He says, we need to treasure sex because we are living. We need to live as children of light. And so here's some of the contrasts that he says about the sexual words, sexual innuendo, and contrasts it and says, look, live as children of light. And here's some things he says to do. First of all, it's thanksgiving. He says, instead of being greedy, instead of talking about sexually immoral things, why don't we just take a moment and say, God, thank you so much for what you've given me. Because I would be willing to bet that any of you in your situation right now no matter how bad or hard it may be, I'd be willing to bet that there is at least one other person in this room that wishes they had it as good as you do. Because we've all got our issues. We've all got our struggles. And yet, we basically say, God, you're not enough. This isn't enough. I want more. And Paul says, look, take a moment and just thank God for what you've got. If we're children of light, if we're living in the light, then we need to be thanking him and say, God, thank you. Thank you for my marriage. I know it's not perfect. I know it's got issues, but thank you for giving that to me. Thank you for my kids or my job or my... I mean, we could list on and on and on, and I can tell you. Again, you might be like, well, my situation's really, really bad. That's if you're a guy, hopefully. If you're a lady, you might be like, my situation's really, really bad. But I can tell you that I guarantee you that there is someone else in this room that wishes they had it the way you do. And Paul says, look, live as children of light. Thank God for what we've got. Have you ever thanked God? We talked about this the first week. Have you ever thanked God for sex? Woo! Thank you, Jesus. And I mean that. It's good stuff. I mean, we talked about this the first week. God could have been like, I want you to be fruitful and multiply. I want you to have kids, and it's going to be the most horrendous process ever. But it isn't. It's perfectly easy. All 9 months of pregnancy, delivery, it's perfectly smooth. Now, that's the result of sin. But as we said, you know, Adam and Eve were having sex before sin even entered the world in the garden. So Thanksgiving. Paul says the cure for immorality, impurity, and greed is Thanksgiving. And it's true. I mean, even when you break it outside of this realm of sex, when you start talking about just our own desire for more, and, oh, I wish I had what they have, or I wish I had more money, or a better car, or better, more. And Paul says the secret to contentment is godliness, thanksgiving, just saying, God, thank you. Thank you for what I've got. So that's one thing he says as children of light. Thank God for what you've got. The second thing, and I kind of group these together, this is goodness and righteousness. Goodness and righteousness, and these both mean, like, goodness means anything that is good. Anything that has an equality of good. Righteousness means anything that is right. Anything that is just. He says that our lives as children of light, we're not living in darkness anymore. So we need to be thanking God for what we've got. But we also need to be focusing on things that are good and are right. We need to be marked by goodness and righteousness. He says that our lives, as those that have been changed out of darkness, the fruit of that should be goodness and righteousness. And so the question is, do your thoughts, discussions, relationships, viewing, or listening habits revolve around what is good and right? Or do you make excuses and downplay it? Do your thoughts, do the things you think about, are they good and right? Are your discussions things that would be described as good and right? Are your relationships? Would God say that is a good relationship? Are your viewing habits good and right? Are your listening habits good and right? That's what he's saying. And I say, you all, me all, right away I'm like, oh, well, that thing doesn't really count. I mean, it's got a good moral. It's got a good message in it. I don't really listen to the lyrics. Pick your thing. Oh, well, they really need Jesus, so I'm dating them to Jesus. I know that they don't care anything about him and have nothing to do with him, and I know we're having sex and that's wrong too, but someday God might transform them in the midst of our inappropriate sexual contact. I mean, we make excuses, and I'm not trying to make light of that, I understand. But recognize that we're children of light. We don't need to live in the darkness anymore. We need to be focusing on things that are good and right. The third thing he says is we need to be focusing on things that are true. Truth. The Greek word is aletheia. It means truth. It means that which is true, that which is real. He says, like I said earlier, he said, don't be deceived by empty words. empty words or those people that are lying and telling you that's not that big of a deal. He says, but living as children of light means we focus on truth. We recognize that, looking at last week, we recognize that homosexuality is wrong. But we also recognize that the way we have responded to that issue as Christ followers has been wrong as well. We recognize that sex outside of marriage is wrong. But we also understand that truth says that that's why Jesus died, to restore our relationships, to fix things, to make them right again. That is truth. Truth is being real. Truth is saying, you know what? This is what Paul says we should do. This is what God says we should do in His Word. And I stand in front of you and say, I don't do that very well. Truth is how we're supposed to live as children of the light. And I will say this, and I don't care how much you know, how medically inclined you may be, whatever. Culture does not teach the truth about sex. It doesn't. I was reading this in one of the books I was reading. And one interesting thing is that porn stars in a porn movie, video, whatever, they never hug, cuddle, or hold hands. There's a reason for that. Because sex has become the object and not the relationship. That's not true. That's not reality. There needs to be more relationship than just sex. Movies and romance novels rarely show the work that needs to go into a relationship. We always see the happily ever after, but we never see the work that it takes to get there. Because it takes work. It takes time. It takes putting aside yourself and caring for the needs of the other person. It takes investment. But movies and romance novels, sitcoms never have any other side effects of sleeping around. Never. You rarely even meet the person. There's never any issues with that. And we have tolerated sex. And Paul says, no. Let's be truthful here. Let's say, yeah, there are side effects. There are consequences. Some of them are physical. Some of them are disease-related. Some of them are pregnancy. And some of them are just emotional things that we have to deal with. And I'm not saying that any of those is beyond God's ability to forgive or God's ability to help us through. But we need to understand that we're putting up with stuff that as children of light, as Christ followers, we shouldn't be tolerating. We should be treasuring it. And he concludes the idea by saying, it's time to expose the darkness. It's time to bring this stuff that is in the darkness into the light and see it for what it really is. And as Christ followers, as people that have chosen to follow Jesus Christ as our Savior, he says, if we start living this way, people are going to see a difference. Because the light is going to shine. They're going to say, wait a second. I thought that this was the best way for a relationship. And they're going to see something in you and your relationships and say, wow, what is it about you? Why do you have it all together? And if you're truthful, you'll say, I don't. But God's working. He's taken this. We sung the song a lot. Beautiful things. He's taken these ashes and this dust, and he's turned it into something beautiful, something good. And he can do that in each of our lives. For all these issues we've been talking about over the last month. That's what he's about. That's why he came. That's what Easter and Good Friday are about. That God wants to take these things and restore them. And so we're supposed to deal with sex in an appropriate way. And I would suggest that we should treasure it, not tolerate it. Treasure it. Say, God, this is something that is amazing and beautiful and wonderful. And I know, I got to be honest, you know, this has not been the most encouraging, perhaps, series to those of you that are single. I haven't given you much room for celebration, at least in the current sense. But again, if we're treasuring this the way God designed it and God intended it, then it's going to work out well. And last month, we talked about this idea of reaping what we sow. And I've said it over and over again because I just love this idea that if we are planting weeds, and it grows up to be a weed, we can't question God and say, God, why did you do it that way? God says, because you planted a weed. If you want something to grow up as roses, it's going to take time. It's going to take work. And as Poison so wealthily, artfully said, every rose has its thorn. So there's going to be hard times. Thank you, Brett Michaels. Okay, a few people got that. But it's going to take work and it's going to take time. And this is the idea that we want to treasure this and say, okay, I'm going to do this the way God designed it and let him work it out. And that's how we have healthy, happy marriages and friendships and relationships and kids and families and all of that. And please don't miss me in saying that it's always easy all the time. It's not. But if we're following it and treasuring it the way God designed it, then it's a big deal. Sex should be treasured, not just tolerated. We can't just put up with stuff that we shouldn't be allowing into our eyes, ears, lives, relationships. We need to deal with it. So, there's a story. It's probably not true. Actually, I'm certain it's not true, but it's a cool story. About this man that went to visit a village on the Amazon River. And it was a rather tribal village. They lived in huts and didn't have quite the modern conveniences that we have. And this man was a guest of this tribe, and so he sat down to eat dinner at their little wooden hut table and was the honored guest. And while they're sitting there eating, suddenly an alligator comes up out of the river and comes up and grabs the guy two seats over, grabs his leg, bites it right off, and then goes right back into the river. And nobody did a thing. And the man was, of course, shocked. Like, what? What's going on here? And just kept on eating. And then a little bit later, you know, around mid-meal, near dessert, another alligator came up out of the river. And there was a boy sitting over on the side playing with a ball while he was eating his dessert. And an alligator came up and ate his hand right off. Just bit it right off and went right back into the river. And this is really puzzling. This guy, like, nobody says anything. Nobody got up to help him. Nobody did anything. And then a third time now, an alligator comes up. And this time it just grabs a couple toes off of a person. Bites them off, goes back in the river. And the man's like, why are we not doing anything? This alligator just came up and bit them off. Bit off this guy's hand and this guy's foot, leg, and this guy's toes. And why are you not doing anything? And one of the guys next to him said, shh. Impolite to talk about the alligator in our culture. We don't talk about it around here. If you want to stay our honored guest, you don't talk about the alligator or we're going to kick you out. And I think when it comes to the church, we are tolerating alligators climbing out of the river, biting off people's legs, and we're not doing a thing about it. We're ignoring it. We're not talking about it because it's impolite. We get angry when someone says, hey, here's something in your life you might need to change. And I got to say, I don't know how your prime groups have been this month, but we've had some really cool conversations in our group and been able to discuss and look at things that are hard to look at. It's easy to point out at other people, and as we looked at last week, it's easy to see the speck of dust in someone else's eye and miss the log in your own eye. But here's the deal. We can't just ignore this. We can't just pretend that it's not a big deal, or we can't say, well, it's inappropriate to talk about. No, we're going to talk about it. We're going to address it. We're going to say the way we're living is wrong. The things that we're tolerating when it comes to sex are wrong. We need to treasure this. And Jesus said, this is how you're going to do it. If this is wrong, let's deal with this. So Jesus explained how we should address it in Matthew chapter 5, and it'll be on the screen here. We've already read this passage. We read this a couple weeks ago. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you, and this Jesus says this all the time, you heard that it was said, but I tell you, that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And so a couple of weeks ago, we talked about this idea of lust promises what it can't deliver. Jesus says, you know, oh, well, I haven't actually had intercourse with a person that's not my spouse. Jesus says, look, if you look lustfully at them, then you've just committed adultery in your heart. It doesn't matter. It's still an issue. It's still sin. And that's what we looked at 2 weeks ago. I guess it was 2 weeks ago. But then Jesus goes on. He says, if your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. So why am I dressed like a surgeon? Because sometimes when it comes to this issue, Jesus expects us to do a little bit of spiritual surgery. We need to cut out and get rid of the things that are not pleasing to Him. As children of the light, we can't tolerate sex. We need to treasure it. So that means removing some things. That means dealing with some stuff. It's going to require us to address the sin in our lives and cut it out like a good surgeon. So making the cut, here's some things I just want to throw out there as some ideas as Jesus shares this concept. He says, okay, you know, if your eye causes you to sin, get rid of your eye. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. Because it's better to lose that part than for your whole body to be cast into hell. So some things that Jesus talks about. First of all, Jesus says that this should be intentional. Jesus doesn't say, hey, you know, if you're sinning, just go to hell. Or just kill yourself because you're never going to deal with it. He says, look, if it's your eye, deal with your eye. Don't worry about the rest of your body. Deal with your eye because your eye is the issue. If your eye is causing you to stumble, then gouge it out. If it's your hand, don't cut off your legs. Get rid of your hand because your hand is the issue. Cutting off your legs is just going to hurt and you're still going to have the hand. He says we need to be intentional about the sin. We need to be intentional and say that is the problem. That is the issue that needs to be addressed. The word cause to stumble there, that phrase means that. It means cause to stumble. Your version might say if it causes you to sin. And the issue here is what Jesus is saying is that if it's causing you, if something here that is not sinful, like your hand is not sinful, it's a hand. See? Nothing sinful about it. But if you're doing sinful things with your hand, if your hand is causing you to, I don't know, pick up knives and stab people, he says, cut off your hand. Be intentional about the issue. But he says, his idea is causing to stumble. That there's nothing sinful about the hand, but if it is causing you to trip up, when we stumble, I mean, unless you're my sons, who like, you know, once someone giggles about something, then they have to do it like 80 times after that. But unless you're my sons, you probably don't stumble on purpose. You're probably not walking along going, whoa, it's an accident. It's unintentional. And he says that if this idea of causing to stumble, that if you have a part of your body that is accidentally tripping you up, and when we trip, we're in trouble. When we hit the ground, it hurts. When we fall, we're down. But he says, don't worry about dealing with the sin and the fall part. I mean, worry about that. But step back a moment and be intentional about what's causing you to fall. What's causing you to stumble. If your hand is causing you to get caught up in sin, Jesus says, cut it off. If your eye is causing you to stumble, then pluck it out. It's not that these things are sin in themselves, and this is going to make sense in just a bit. It's dealing with the thing that's causing you to sin. So the second thing that Jesus says is that not only does it need to be intentional, but it needs to be drastic. We need to be drastic about this. These words that Jesus are using are not calm every day. Oh, not that big of a deal. Gouge it out? That's not very pleasant. The word literally means like to rip out is what it means. To rip out of your head. And Justin had the privilege this past week of leading the homeschool group. Some of your kids are a part of in dissecting an eyeball. And not everybody thought it was very pleasant, even though the eyeball had already been taken out. Jesus makes it even worse. He says, you know what? We're not just going to deal with an already removed eyeball. He says, pull it out. Be drastic about it. Get rid of your eye. If your hand is causing you to stumble, cut it off. He doesn't say, like, cover it up a little bit or maybe wear a glove. Hide it behind your back. Sit on your hands. I don't know why he would talk that way because he's not. But he doesn't say that. He says, cut it off. Get rid of your hand if it's causing you to stumble. We need to be drastic. Paul, in the passage we were looking at in Ephesians there, he doesn't use calm every day, oh, well, maybe, maybe not, kind of words. He uses words where he says, not even a hint. He doesn't give room for not a hint. He says, any kind of impurity. He says, do not be partners with these things. Have nothing to do with them. Paul doesn't leave room. Jesus doesn't leave room. He says, if we're going to deal with sin, if we're going to treasure sex, then we're going to have to be drastic about it. Well, do you mean that? Yes, I do mean that I have to get rid of? Yes. Deal with it. If it's causing you to sin, get rid of it. Get rid of it. Intentional, drastic, and the last thing is that it's hopeful. And this is what Jesus says. He says, look, I know it's going to hurt to rip out your eye. I know it's going to hurt to perform your own surgery on your hand. He says, but look, understand that if you get rid of that thing that's causing you to stumble, then you have hope. Because now I'm making your life, your life is not heading in the direction of darkness and the direction of hell, but your life is headed in the direction of Christ. And understand here, he's not saying that, the way he's using this phrase, hell, to be thrown into hell, he's not saying that if you sin, you're going to hell. He's saying our sin leads in the direction of hell, but Jesus has pulled us away. And he says, stop going back there. He's kind of reiterating the same thing that Paul, I guess Paul reiterated what he said chronologically, but he's saying, you know, don't live in darkness. Lose your hand. If you need to lose your hand so that you're living in the light, then get rid of your hand, because this is for your good. That you might have to make some difficult cuts. There might be some bloodshed. There might be a lot of pain. But in doing that, you're making the rest of your body healthy for later. He says, cut the cancer out. Deal with that issue so that the rest of your body is safe. There's hope in this. And that's what we need to understand, is that if we're going to treasure sex, if we're going to deal with this thing the way God intended it, then it's going to require us to make some cuts, to perform some surgery. We need to be intentional and say, okay, what are the things that are tripping me up? What are the things that are causing me to stumble? And we need to look at our own lives and saying, what is it that's doing that? Who is it that's doing that? Who or what are the things that are pulling me back into darkness, that are pulling me back into coarse joking and sexual immorality and inappropriate talk, whatever? And he says, deal with them drastically. Address the issue. Someone once said that the problem with sin is that we treat it like a cream puff instead of a rattlesnake. And if we play around with rattlesnakes, you're going to get bitten. Jesus says, cut the head off of that snake. Get rid of it. Deal with it. So here's what I want you to think about. And it's this phrase that probably won't show up very well because I have some font issues, but this is the last week. But if your blank causes you to sin, throw it away. This throwing it away, it says cut it off and throw it away. Throw it away doesn't mean just like drop it there. The idea, it means to get rid of, to make it, to put distance between it. Gone. Not nearby. He says, throw it away. So what is in that blank for you? If we're going to perform some spiritual surgery, if we're going to treasure sex, then we need to stop tolerating it. We need to cut out some things. We need to get rid of some things. We need to be intentional about the issues that are tripping us up, and deal with them, and know that it's not going to be easy to deal with them, but we're setting up something better down the road. We're setting up something good. I mean, we've talked about this billions of times, that God's plan for us is the best plan. God's design for us is the best design. And we think, and I think, Sean Fitch thinks that Sean Fitch's way is better so often, and Sean Fitch does Sean Fitch's thing, and not God's thing. And Sean Fitch sometimes needs to be drastic and be intentional about dealing with things so that I can live the way God intended, knowing that, wow, this might hurt, but it's an investment. It's something for better. So, if your TV causes you to sin, throw it away. Well, that TV was an investment. I don't care! Throw it away. If it's causing you to sin, if it's tearing apart your marriage, get rid of it. Be drastic about it. If cable is an issue, get rid of cable. If satellite is an issue, get rid of satellite. Be drastic. If TV is causing you to sin, throw it away. Don't make excuses. Don't cover it up. Deal with it. If books, if your book that you're reading or books that you're reading are causing you to sin, throw them away. I have a lot of them. I have the whole series. I don't care. It's better for you to lose $100 in books than for your whole body to go to hell. then the direction of your life to be going opposite of what God has in mind for you. If your computer causes you to sin, throw it away. Get rid of it. Make changes. Deal with it. We can't be fooled around with this. If your music causes you to sin, throw it away.
I just like it for the beat.
I don't care. Seriously, if 99 cents for a song, like, I'll help you out, okay? I'll hook you up if it's like, oh, it's a big investment there. Get rid of it. Dump the music. Get rid of that stuff if it's causing you to sin. If it is causing you to stumble, if there is something in it that stirs your mind to something that is in the darkness as opposed to in the light, cut it off. If your girlfriend or boyfriend is causing you to sin, cut it off. You mean that I have to break? Yes, break up with them. If they cannot respect your relationship as a Christ follower, if they can't handle the fact that you're in the light and they don't want to be, they're going to pull you into darkness. You need to cut it off. You don't have to be rude and obnoxious. You can be completely loving and say, look, maybe have a long, hard conversation because it's going to hurt. But you're going to deal with it and say, look, I can't go on with this because I've got to live in the light. And you're going to be told, well, it's not that big of a deal. Come on, oh, are you just being churchy, or are you just... Cut it off. If your job is causing you to sin, cut it off. If your job is causing you to sin, throw it away. If you're being asked to do things by your employers that are not appropriate, that are as the darkness, I don't know what that means, but you know what I'm saying. If there are people in your job that are causing you to stumble, if there are sexual issues or attractions, deal with it. Ask for a transfer. Quit your job. It would be better for you to lose your job than for your whole marriage to go to hell. For your whole marriage to fall apart. For your family to fall apart because you're attracted to the person over there. Deal with it. Address it. If your close friends are causing you to sin, cut them off. Throw them away. And I'm not saying you can't be around people that are sinners. Sorry, we'll all have to leave the building and move into a box. But if the people that are influencing your lives, if the people that are leaning into you, that are telling you and planting the thoughts in your minds, if the main voices are people that are not following Christ and you're listening to them, you're going to have to kind of demote their status. You're going to have to get other voices to influence you. You're going to have to change that. You need to cut that off. But what about them? They need Jesus. Yes, they do. And He can heal and change, and you can still be friends with them. But make sure they're not the ones influencing the direction of your life. If your magazine subscription is causing you to sin, throw it away. Well, it's only one issue a year. Throw it away. Get rid of it. It is better to lose a subscription to a magazine than to tear your family apart. If your travel schedule is causing you to sin, if where you drive, and I'm not saying like flying travel schedule, but like if the places you go bring back thoughts, then don't go that way. Go a different way. If they are causing you to sin, change where you drive. Find a different way to cross the river so you don't have to go through Dauphin. I'm serious. Well, it's going to take like an extra 2 hours. It's better to drive 2 extra hours than to get caught up in all of that junk. If your movies or a movie causes you to sin, if you are in a movie and it's causing issues for you, get up and walk out. And yes, you've lost $7.50, depending on where you went. If it's 3D, you got the surcharge in State College, somewhere around $30. Especially if you bought the Raisinettes. But it's better to leave the movie, lose the money, than to be headed in a direction that is not honoring to God. If Facebook Instagram, Twitter, whatever, if those things are causing you to sin, close your account. It's better for you not to know what people are baking in their things and what cute little dog did a stupid thing. It's better to not know that than to be caught up in sin. If your cell phone is causing you to sin, because cell phones are personal, they're smart, you can go anywhere with it and no one will ever know. If that's an issue, get a flip phone. Get rid of the smartphone. If it's causing you to sin, get rid of it. But my contract is... Get rid of it. Lose the $200 contract termination fee for the sake of the future health of your relationships. If there's a restaurant that you go to and it causes you to sin, if it causes you to stumble, don't eat there anymore. But the food is really good. It's a great discount. It's a great buy. It's better for you to get not have that food than to have the direction of your life heading away from Christ, heading back into the darkness. And we could go on for a long time here. But I think we need to address that question of what is it that is causing us to sin? What is it that is pulling us back into darkness? And we need to be drastic. And again, it's not the thing. There is nothing sinful about a computer. It's a bunch of diodes and anodes and cathodes and codes and, yeah, toads, all that. Anyway, but if it's used in an inappropriate way, it becomes sin. Do you understand? There's nothing wrong with keeping in touch with people on the phone. There's nothing wrong with driving a car. And we need to be careful that we don't make those the issue. We need to make sin the issue. But if these things are causing us to sin, Jesus says, take a step back and deal with the sin, the thing that's causing you to sin, not even the sin. Don't even get into that spot where you need to constantly ask for forgiveness, which is offered and available and given. But he says, deal with it before it gets there. Deal with these things. If your whatever causes you to sin, throw it away. Sex should be treasured, not just tolerated. This whole series, we've been talking about all sorts of stuff. And it comes down to this, is that we need to deal with it. The first week, you might have been challenged in your relationship. You know what? I'm not married, and so I need to address some things. Then deal with it. Address it. Be intentional. Be drastic. Don't let the rest of your life and wondering why it's not turning out all roses. And Jesus is saying, look, deal with it. Maybe you're in a marriage relationship, and your sexual relationship is not what God intended it to be. Deal with it. Be drastic. Go away for the weekend. Have someone watch your kids. Take an afternoon nap. Deal with it. If it's an issue of lust that we talk about the second week, be drastic. Get rid of those things. Get rid of those things that are causing temptation. Last week, if it's how we address homosexuality, we need to deal with it. If there's someone that we need to apologize to for the way we treated them, then do it. Because this is an amazing thing that God has created. It's a wonderful thing. And there's, like we said the first week, and if you haven't listened to it, you go to mc3church.org and download the point from the series. But the first week we talked about, God designed it on purpose, for a purpose. It was perfect. And that's the way he set it up. So, that's pretty much it. We need to deal with sin. We need to address it. And say, God, thank you so much. And thank you for rescuing us. This week in your prime groups, you're going to have a chance to look at the story of the woman caught in adultery. And I don't know if it's in the discussion guide this way, but it says she was caught in the act of adultery. It means they ripped her out of bed. She was probably not clothed at the point when they brought her before Jesus. And Jesus said two things to her specifically. He says, has no one condemned you? Because I don't condemn you either. And I would say the same thing in our sin. We are not here to condemn you. But the second thing he said to this woman, he said, go and sin no more. Grace and truth. That's what Jesus was all about. That's what hopefully MC3 is all about. We're here to deal with these issues and say, hey, we screw up. I screw up. You screw up. We need to address these things. And so I say what Jesus says. I'm not here to condemn you. I'm not Jesus. But I also say, go and sin no more. Address it. Deal with it. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for this time that we've had this month. And I'm just so grateful for the open minds and hearts and discussions that we've had over this last month, looking at sex. And I just pray for us right now. I know that For me, there's probably three or four or maybe more things that go in that blank. Things that cause me to stumble. And I know that in this room, there's probably many things that we can put into that blank. And I just pray that you would help us to take a moment and look at our own hearts and lives and know that you're here to forgive us no matter how simple or how horrendous we may think sin is. But that you would help us then to address these things and to deal with them, to be drastic, to get rid of the sin so that we're not just tolerating sex as this world does, but that we're treasuring it, that we're performing surgery in these areas of our lives that need to be dealt with so that we can live as children of light because we're not in the darkness anymore. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.